Okay, we are back. You have it tuned to KHUM, and my name is Lindsay. I am super happy to be joined by Cynthia Bichelle. She's visiting from, came down from Arcata today to talk to us about an event going on Saturday, March 4th, up at HSU. Thanks for coming down, Cynthia.
Thank you so much for opening your studio to me.
Yeah, for sure. And you got here just a little while ago, so I've been ignoring what's getting played over the air and deep in conversation with you, but you're here to speak specifically about this event going on March 4th, and is called Water is Life?
Water is Life, yes, that's correct. What we're doing with the event is we are talking about the Water is Life movement, connecting some of the things that have happened at Standing Rock with some of the proposed projects here in the north, particularly in the Klamath River. And really the purpose of this event is, first of all, we really want to open it to the community and talk about some of the context and the background of what has happened at Standing Rock and what is happening with, you know, the waters of the entire planet, really. And we're going to be talking about also not just the historical context, but also kind of the state that we're in right now, the condition and sort of the political state of things as well. And then we're going to be talking about what we can do in the future going forward, what kind of actions we can do and how we can organize to be prepared when they bring the fight to us. Not if they bring the fight to us, but we know it's coming. How are we going to be prepared to meet it?
That's awesome. And so this event is going on Saturday, March 4th from noon until 6. Where exactly is it happening?
It's happening on the Humboldt State University campus at the Kate Buchanan Room. So that's right in the center of campus underneath the clock tower.
Yes, I've been there. Upstairs.
Yes, upstairs.
Okay, cool. It seems like you're taking maybe some cues from what has happened at Standing Rock and maybe expanding with people on what we can learn from that movement in particular. What kind of things do you feel like that movement has really brought to people's attention?
Well, I think that's a really great question. And, you know, first of all, I just want to say that the water protection action at Standing Rock, that was really a movement that was begun by Indigenous people, that was really spurred by Indigenous youth. And it was about praying for the water. The water is alive. It's a living entity. It was about praying for the well-being of the water. And it was women that led this. And it was the men that defended their communities. So it's really an entire community action. I think that that right there is a really good model for us to take a lesson from. We all have to be involved, no matter the age, no matter the gender. You know, it's really important for us to all stand together. It's not about a single individual. It's about the well-being of all of us. It's about survival. It's about resisting genocide. So I think that that is a lesson that we all can take from that. It's not just putting a pipeline underneath the Cannonball River or underneath Lake Oahe. It's about all of the pipelines everywhere that are destroying the earth and destroying the water. Without water, we can't live, right? We are water. Our bodies are, you know, over 70% water. We are all bodies of water with a few solid material pieces interspersed. So that water is part of us. All the waters are connected. I think that those are all really important lessons that we can take from this. And once you start realizing that that water is you and that you are that water, that water is you, that you are the water, then you realize that you're defending yourself.
That is definitely an interesting perspective to come at. It's like loving the water is self-love, and self-love is loving water because you are water. And that is definitely a connection that I feel like people don't necessarily make on the daily. And that's cool. So you are going to be kind of opening up this platform at your event on March 4th for different people's perspectives of what they've learned?
Yeah, so here's what we're going to do. First of all, we're going to have a couple of speakers. We're going to have Professor Marlon Sherman talking about the historical context of Indigenous struggles. Kutcha Risling Baldy, who is also she's a new faculty member in the Native American Studies Department. She's going to be talking about women and the environment, the connection between that, and why it's so important. We're also going to be having a briefing on issues related to Northern California, related to the water. We've asked Willard Carlson to come and talk about the connection between the original Wounded Knee Massacre, the action that took place in Wounded Knee in, several decades ago, and then also with Standing Rock. And he's going to connect all of those to the Klamath as well. He's making a film. He's a documentary filmmaker. So I think he's probably going to show a little bit of his film, maybe a trailer or something. Tia Oros Peters is going to be with us from Seventh Generation Fund. She's going to be giving us an international perspective on water issues as well. We're going to have panels on intergenerational trauma and healing, and also on using social media for organizing. So this kind of comes around to the social organizing part. And then we're going to have some survival discussion circles. We're going to cover several topics on those. Some of the people who have been to Standing Rock, some of the water protectors, are going to be invited to get together and talk about their experiences. And we're going to have Laura Cutler, who's a local attorney, talking with some people about what to expect when you're engaged in civil disobedience, you know, when you're faced with military action for praying for the water. We're going to have people talking about documenting social action, trauma and healing, and Indigenous activism and advocacy. So those will all be opportunities for people to get together and talk about some of their observations, some of what they've done in the past, some of what they think we should all be doing in the future, and they'll be coming back together with a few recommendations for all of us. We're trying to come out of this with actions that people can take going into the future and give us all some direction. So we're really hoping that this will be a community-led event, and that people will use it as an opportunity to network, begin to organize, so that we're prepared for the battle that is to come.
It sounds like an amazing lineup and breadth of discussions that are going to be presented at this event, and I really, really want to go. I wish I didn't. I have other obligations, but will you be recording any of these, documenting any of these?
We are looking for someone to do some video recording of that. And so, shout out if anybody is interested in video recording effort. That would be really great. I think that this is something that the entire community really should have access to, whether you can attend on that day or not.
Yeah, like Facebook Live or something. Even.
Exactly.
Cool. Yeah. So if you do have the ability to go to this event and are interested in documenting it, putting it up online, get in touch with Cynthia. What would be the best way if people are wanting to learn more about this event and to get in touch with you?
The best way is to email our event email, mm-hmm. and that is waterislife, all one word, .hsu@gmail.com. So it's a Gmail address, and it's waterislife.hsu@gmail.com.
Okay. I'm writing that down. I'll put that up on the KHUM webpage as well with this interview. So
thank you.
Yeah, thanks again for coming in. And before we got on the air, we were talking about kind of where you're from and where I'm from. And you were born in Tacoma, Washington, but your people are from an area that's close to where I was born and raised. Can you talk a little bit about your ancestry and your history?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be happy to. I am Kusa Kasadi Muskogee. My people are from the Georgia, what we now know as the political states of Georgia and Alabama, you know, the kind of southern three quarters of those states. and a little bit into Mississippi, all the way down to kind of like into the Florida panhandle. So that was our traditional territory and still is, really. You know, I don't like to put it in the past tense. It's just, you know, it still is ours.
Yeah.
No matter what.
You were talking about getting a chance to go there and visit, and how the connection that you felt with your land that you were from, that you had never been there before. Can you tell us a little bit about
that? I'd love to. You know, my grandmother remained in Alabama when my mother and father really removed to Washington State, and it was really great to go visit my grandmother. I was about probably 8 years old when I first went back to my homeland, and you know, the connection that I felt was instant. It was like I felt like I had come home. And it really kind of drives home to me that genetic memory of the land that really every single one of us has. We all have that connection to our ancestral homeland. And it doesn't matter whether you're, you know, from a North American tribe, or whether you're from, you know, whether your people originated in a European tribe. We're all tribal people. We all have that memory, you know, buried within us. And it's really interesting how it gets activated sometimes.
Before we're talking about that, we're talking about colonization. And I was in Pensacola, and that area of Florida was actually the first area in the South that was colonized. It's kind of a not very well-known fact, because St. Augustine claims that they were the first place in the South, but those were your people that were met with the colonizers in that area of Florida.
Yeah, and the explorer, I guess, to put it politely, the explorer that came into our territory was DeSoto.
Okay.
And, you know, he went on a rampage throughout our land and, you know, kind of went north and slaughtered and, you know, spread disease and raped and pillaged, you know, all along. And one of the tribes from our Confederacy, some of my ancestors, the Mabila tribe, actually engaged him in a battle and wounded him, and he died in our land. So I think that's something that I actually feel pretty proud of our people for doing, you know, defending their land. You know, later on, we also, some of my ancestors fought Andrew Jackson as well. And he couldn't defeat our warriors, so he began murdering our young people and our women. And finally, you know, one of my uncles was leading the battle, and he said, that's enough. So they made a treaty. But yeah, there's a lot of memory, and a lot of, you know, colonialism is violence. So it's really all about violence and oppression and genocide. So that's
our history. That's your history. And so I was noticing that being raised in the same area that your ancestors and your history's from, the history that I learned does not include your history. And that bothers me, and that should bother me, right? That should bother everyone, that we're not really learning all the sides of this history. And you had an interesting explanation for that.
Well, yes. I mean, what would happen if from the time that you were a child, you learned about, you learned that your nation committed a genocide on the people that were here before, and that was why this nation is even here. It's founded on genocide. I mean, how would you look at the world differently? I think that I would like to think that that would be unacceptable to anyone who learned that from the time that they were a child. And how would that change your outlook? How would it change the way that we see the government? How would that change the way that we have, you know, relationships with the people around us? I think that colonialism is something that is purposely taught, that ideology of colonialism. And it is an ideology, you know. It's like a jail for our minds. It keeps us within a very strict set of perceptions. When you have colonialism, you're being taught to think like a destructive person. So we were talking about, you know, where does that come from? Why do we think that it's acceptable to destroy the land, right? I mean, Wasn't that one of your questions?
That was definitely one of my questions. It feels like, well, if we've got to live on this earth too, why are we destroying it? Like Pensacola, going back to Pensacola, mm-hmm. there's 7 Superfund sites there. I mean, why are we living these conditions where we don't care about poisoning ourselves? And, you know, what is allowing us to have that mental capacity to do that?
And, you know, I think that's such a great question, because really it does come down to that, right? Like, why are we doing this? Why is that acceptable? Why are so many people in, for instance, in North Dakota saying, well, I'm so glad that you shut down those protesters. We really need a pipeline. And, you know, it goes back to, you have to really look at the ideology that is the colonial mindset, right? And so when you start deconstructing that, where does that come from? Well, it's a mindset that was brought to us from, quote, Europe. It had its roots in Europe. But what was the mindset, particularly what was the ideology? And, you know, all of those nations of Europe at the time of discovery were under Christian monarchs. They were Christian monarchs because they had been baptized into the Catholic Church. And so they swore loyalty to the Pope. Well, this mindset then, and I'm talking about now about the political ideology, this was a Christian political ideology, that the Pope was and continues to be the right-hand man of God, right? The spokesperson of God on earth. And so what really is the Christian mindset then when it relates to the environment? What it is that Christians believe that God created the earth and everything is God's creation. Being God's creation, then it's his property. And people who identify as Christians are the children of God, so they are the inheritors of God's property. They were told to dominate the earth, to subdue the earth. And so, being the inheritors of God's property, they believe that they have an inherent right to do whatever they want on the earth, which is to profit. This is part of the Christian creation story. This is part of the genesis of Christian ideology. Now, when you fast forward and you look at the Christian story at the end, because there is an end with the Christian story, right? And the end is that the earth is going to be destroyed. There's going to be an Armageddon, and the earth is going to be destroyed, and then God is going to create a new heaven and a new earth. So, in the meantime, between the time of creation and the time of destruction, it's up to the Christian people to exploit the earth, to do whatever they want to the earth. It's God's property, it belongs to the Christian people. And so that's where this political ideology comes from. And again, I want to emphasize, I'm not hating on anybody's spiritual belief.
Religion.
It's not about what you believe spiritually, it's about when you take a spiritual belief and make it into a political ideology, it is no longer a personal thing. It's something that gets used to oppress people and to exploit the earth. So, you know, when you have that Armageddon mentality, then it becomes a race to see who can exploit the most. That's where this idea of, you know, this colonized idea of capitalism and, you know, exploitation of the earth, really, that's the source, is that Armageddon sort of mentality.
And so how do we really look at ourselves and examine our colonized minds and deconstruct those thoughts and kind of assimilate thoughts that are more in line to depoliticizing our belief system and living with a deeper connection to our environment?
Well, I think that's a great question. And I think that really what we're talking about is decolonizing ourselves. You have to decolonize yourself before you can decolonize anybody else, right? How am I going to fix something if I myself am broken? Right. And so decolonization has to be a personalized process. And, you know, that's tough. That's really tough. And there are different ways to do it. For instance, getting in touch with your native tongue, learning your native language. And I know that for people of European descent, that's really hard to do. Where am I from, right?
Yeah.
Like, how many different nations and you know, original tribes am I related to? But I think that really digging into that and finding the answers to those questions, that's one step in the process. When you start learning those languages, that's another step in the process, because cultural knowledge is embedded in the language. You know, we speak the language of English, right? And that comes from the Latin language, right? The Roman tongue. That was a language of destruction. So when we speak, we're speaking a language of destruction. Going back to a native language, particularly a tribe that was not a destructive tribe. My tribe was not a let's destroy everything in our path, let's commit genocide type of tribe, right? So when I go back to my native language, I am speaking a language that does not have that genocidal tendency in it. We don't have a word for genocide. The native languages don't really necessarily have a word for genocide. I would be surprised to find if they did. So learning a language is one way that you can do it, you know. I think that learning as much as you can about outside this fake reality of colonialism, getting in touch with the earth, learning the laws of the land, really, because the land, the physical land itself, will teach you this is what you need to do to take care of the creatures of the earth and of yourself. So I think that those are all ways that you can decolonize. There's a lot of different ways to do it, and there's a lot of scholars that have written on it that are much smarter and more adept at explaining it than I am.
Who would you recommend reading?
Michael Yellowbird has written about it, and he's got some good books on decolonizing. Taiyaki Alfred is another one. And if you'd like, I can send you some information on those, and you can post them on your site.
Okay.
If you'd like to do that.
For sure, I would definitely
I've got several sources in my library at home that I would highly recommend.
Okay.
Yeah.
I appreciate you sharing some perspective. If you're just joining in, we're speaking with Cynthia Bushell, and she is joining us here in the studio today. There's an event going on March 4th. Up at HSU in the Kate Buchanan Room, and it's going on from noon to 6, free to the public. Everyone is invited to attend, and there's a whole amazing lineup of guest speakers and presenters, and it looks like it's going to be a really amazing event, kind of geared to bring community together and get organized to be ready when things like Standing Rock start to affect our local community. Am I paraphrasing that correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. That's exactly what we're here for.
So do you mind sticking around? Can we take a real short break and then stick around and
sure.
Talk a little bit more?
Sounds great.
Okay. We're going to take a real short break. The noon whistle rang. Gosh, that was 18 minutes ago. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago. And I want to thank you for tuning in to 104.3 and 104.7 KHUM, Cut in Eureka, Arcata. Stream on the web at khum.com. Translator K282AD. Ferndale will be back right after this. Okay, we're back. It's 12:21, and you have attuned to K-Hom. My name is Lindsay, and I'm joined in the studio by Cynthia Bushell. Sorry. And she's talking about an event that's happening on Saturday called Water is Life up at HSU in the Kate Buchanan Room. And there are several people who are affiliated with putting this event together, right?
Yes. So... We received a cultural programming grant from the Associated Students at Humboldt State University, and I want to give a shout out to them for having the foresight to help fund this event. Also, I want to thank Seventh Generation Fund for stepping up and, you know, giving us some support and also contributing to some of the things that we needed contributed to. So I wanted to acknowledge them as well.
And you were speaking off air about the subject matter of women and how they relate in society and their connection with nature. I'm not saying that very well. You can say it better than me.
Well, yes. And I just want to say that we are so excited about the speakers. We have all Indigenous speakers, which is really, you know, important to highlight the Indigenous voice, because this is a movement that began with the Indigenous people, and it's very much the people who are advocating for it are Indigenous people. So we are extremely excited. We've got an all Indigenous agenda here for everyone. And Katja Risling Baldy is a new faculty member this semester in the NAS department, Native American Studies department. She is going to be talking about the connection between women and the environment. And I think, you know, we've probably all kind of assumed that there's a connection between, you know, women and nature and women and the environment. But I think it's really important to understand, like, and I'm just going to talk about it from my own cultural perspective, from my own people's perspective. In our culture, both the earth and the water are female living entities. And the water is the sister to the earth. Both of them work together to create life. And they are very much alive. All of water is connected. It is one single body. And so when you think about all the water in the universe, that is all connected. Water has a memory. Water remembers actions. It can be affected by intention. And so I think that's something that people don't really realize, you know. You can set a glass of water near a stereo speaker, and it will actually, when you freeze it, it will actually change the shape of the crystals. I mean, it really can be affected by energy. It can be affected by intention, even from afar. I was reading some interesting information about a scientist in Japan who had done some experiments with water and having people from afar direct their intentions toward a container of water. And it would affect the water when they froze it. So these are two female entities. And the thing is that when corporations and colonizers go out and start exploiting and destroying the earth and the water, it's an attack on women. And it leads to the same thing that paternalism and domination lead to in a society, which is the abuse of women, the traumatization of women. So I think that Katja is really going to be able to get into that and talk really deeply about it. And I highly recommend that if you can only make one talk, that, you know, definitely go hear Katja.
What time is she going to be speaking?
Katja is on our agenda for, she is on the agenda. That segment starts at 12:45 p.m. And Marlon Sherman is going to be speaking first, giving a talk about the historical context of Indigenous struggles, giving some background on treaties, tribal sovereignty, why that's so important to every single one of us to defend that. It's not just an Indigenous issue. It's everybody's issue. And then Katja is going to be speaking after him. So I highly recommend that if you can only go to one part, go to the 12:45 to 1:45 session, because that's going to be an incredible session. They're all going to be great. This one's going to be really cool.
Nice. Well, is there anything else that you would like to add for our listeners? We started talking a little while ago, and if you are interested in coming and would like to document any of these talks and make them available to people who are unable to attend online, that's a great opportunity. They're still in search of people who can do that, and you can get in touch with them by emailing waterislife.hsu@gmail.com. Anything else, Cynthia?
I just want to thank everybody for, I guess, for their attention, and thank you in advance for coming to our event, because I know I'm going to see a lot of you there. So feel free to come up and say hi.
Yeah, thanks for putting this on and for taking time out of your day to come down to Ferndale. And hopefully we will hear back from you again in the near future and see how everything went and what kind of community actions that you guys came up with.
Absolutely. From this event, so I'll be happy to connect with you again.